Hello and welcome to the Rural Report. I'm Jaspreet Boparai, here with my co-host Don Nicholson to bring you a snippet of what caught our attention across the rural headlines and a few urban ones, I must admit, this last week. Hi, Don. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm great, Jaspreet. Gee, I can't believe we're into March already. It seems that New Zealand's just woken up since Christmas and action stations abound. How
There
about
is
you?
a lot on. There is a lot on. I'm distinctly noticing the daylight in the morning coming through the curtains a bit later. Yeah, definitely
So what
feeling.
happened this week that's caught your eye? I mean, the biggest thing was the Barry Crump would make Barry Crump really proud. Their big event at Kingston. It seems a bit frivolous, doesn't it? But it's very funny to me.
I loved it.
1,440 Hiluxes turned up to break a world record of how many Hiluxes you could get in a paddock at one time. I think the South African had the record at 1,465 or thereabouts before. But Kingston, which is at the southern end of Lake Wakatipu, Fairlight Station, in fact, Laura Coote and her team with GWD of Queenstown and Invercargill, they got 1,440 Hiluxes. It would have made Barry Crump. He would be standing at the bar saying, "What a fantastic day out." That'd be a lot of lies told.
The smell of hydrocarbons, eh? Fossil fuels forever, I'd say. Talking of fossil fuels, my family and I, we did a bit. We took the kids over because they had been hankering for this for a while to the Cromwell's Highland Motorsport Park. And yeah, we made sure we did our bit for global warming, Don. You'd be
Did you
proud.
get it? Did you do that speed lap in the Porsche? Did you, Jaspreet?
No, I didn't quite spring for that one. Now, not with the kids being at the age this is, but we did a few other things.
It's great. It's a great amenity they have there, and it's just lovely to have those sorts of different things that you can do without all the encumbrances of people saying that you shouldn't do that stuff. Like we read so much in the media about how we're not allowed to do XYZ, go to Highlanders Park and burn a few
And
hydrocarbons.
it's very funny to me, Don, because I was looking at the CODC, the Central Otago District Council's website, not too long ago. I don't know what's happened, but there was a paper on the table whether the council should bring a supercars event to the Cromwell Motorsport Park with a grant of $250,000. I'm not sure what happened to this, but I remember thinking at that time that this is the same council that counts its emissions, annually commissions a report, and yet they are willing there to spend a quarter of $1 million of ratepayer money to bring a fossil fuel based event there. But yeah, what do I know?
Oh, look, but as we know, you've always got to be wary of geeks bearing gifts. I know that's a play on Greeks bearing gifts, but you do have to be wary. And any council, any agency of a council, any agency of a government that is spreading your money around, yeah, you know there's a catch somewhere. Yeah, someone's going to be messing with your dimes. Anyway, what else is going on? Because boy, we've got so much stuff we could talk about, but we have to sort of nail it down to sort of
And
in
this, give you a taster of what it is. So on
yeah
Farmers
and so
Weekly,
sorry and I was going to say a couple of good things that I were things that I really enjoy getting the results of and watching if I can is the Golden Shears in Masterton. And of course, Tara Henderson from Kaiwaika in the North Island won the Open Shears, and fantastic. It was the first time for him. It's a hell of a sport. I mean, aside from it being an industry and people make a living out of it, it's a fantastic sport to watch. And I remember watching or going to the international or the world champs in Invercargill many years ago in the Southland Stadium. It was a great event seeing these world champion shearers at full speed. I mean, I could shear a sheep in a couple of minutes on a good day. I could do about 250 a day max. And you see a lady, a New Zealand lady in Western Australia, shear 367 Merino cross sheep in 8 hours. I mean, she just me looks like a rank amateur. And,
Well, if you
it's,
can share 250, Don, that's 250 more
yeah.
than you can do. But I can tell you, when I came to New Zealand in 2009, saw the statue at Te Kwiti because we were farming in Otorohanga. And that was my first interaction, wondering what the hell is that shearing statue? And then slowly going, knowing the history and seeing this, those guys are super athletes.
Yeah, they are super athletes.
Guys and gals, I should add, before I'm called a sexist.
Yeah, they run marathons every day, actually, the good ones, they really do. Anyway, hey, that's a bit of levity, but we've got some other issues to talk about, and one is around the Gore District Council just doesn't seem to want to play ball, do they?
No, they do not. And this article has been in the Farmers Weekly this week, and Federated Farmers and Bernadette Hunt from Federated Farmers criticizing what's happening. Now, Gore, you might have heard, was in the news not too long ago when its district plan decided that the entire Gore area should be considered a SASM, a site and areas of significance to Maori, because according to them, asking Ngāti Tahu which particular areas were significant would be an insult. Now, it says rather than the article by Bernadette Hunt in Farmers Weekly says rather than slowing things down, bringing the community with them, and wait for clarity where the government lands its overhaul of the RMA, the Gore District Council is doubling down. Further on the issues of the sites and areas of significance to Maori, chapter hearing on Wednesday, on February 19th, a 125-page document with massive bearing on the issues involved was lodged by a Ngāti Tahu advisor only the Friday below. The council planner's response to issues raised in the report was filed after 5:30 p.m. that evening. Hearings were 8:30 a.m. the next morning, 15 hours to size up these weighty reports. And that's grossly unfair, says Bernadette Hunt, and I agree.
He's
With a
right.
democracy.
I mean, it's an appalling indictment on their system that they've allowed to these other players to put up documents that late in the piece. They should have been like, if I was chairman of the council, I would say those matters will be delayed. The discussion on them will be delayed for at least another 7 days, so we've got time to talk about. But what I don't get here, Jaspreet, is that I thought the Otago Regional Council was told just prior to Christmas by the Minister for the Environment to back off advancing planning the way it had been, because there was going to be changes in the RMA and changes on a whole raft of things that would mean that what people are doing now, what the councils are doing now, will not be required or will be a different requirement in the next act that they have to administer. So why is the Gore Council going ahead full steam? It just seems to me when councils say they're a bit short of cash, in fact, and they always want more, why are they doing this stuff at speed now? It's like they have to get something done and get it locked in so that it's more awkward to break out of in the next regime.
Sure, they don't expect the Minister Penny Simmons to be individually instructing every council. What goes for one should go for all, but there we
Well,
have it.
that's what I would have thought. And just on that, I went to see the acting Prime Minister's address at Invercargill last week, David Seymour. And I'm over political meetings, as you know. I can't be bothered with them. But I sat through it, and it's he spoke well, and he's clever. He knows how to schmooze or rebut. He's very good at it. But one thing that did get to me was, and you've heard me talk about the slowness of the RMA reforms, and I didn't get a great feeling that it's going at speed. In fact, I think the discussion went like this, that by Christmas this year, we might have it tabled in the House, the new documents, and we'll be looking at it to get it in play before the change of government next year. So the cynic in me says there's tension between the coalition parties and it's getting very hard to get it moving. I could be wrong, and I'm happy to be wrong. But again, I just thought that had I had a chance to question him, I would have said, you've had 15 months. This isn't that hard, surely. So there has to be an impediment between the players, in my opinion. And I would suggest that the National Party, having read the address of, or the output of the address that Simon Upton, the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment, gave to the National Party Blue Greens conference in Methven last week, I think, it gives me no hope, or le less hope, that this RMA reform is going apace. What do
We
you
shall
think?
see.
Because I think you read what Simon Upton has said. And, we've been on about this valuing of natural
Long
capital,
time.
and it's front and center of that speech.
I have gone to, talking of natural capital, I have gone to town last week doing all the doc submissions on the natural capital and access to conservation land and charging to all of this. Oh, gosh, we'll see what happens, but it's excruciatingly slow, as you say. You met the acting prime minister, going on to the jet setting prime minister. Let's not talk about their missions here. But it seems Christopher Luxon, his Facebook page says, I ran into this bunch of Kiwi farmers having a drink at Hanoi. So there's a selfie of the PM evening in Hanoi at some point. And he says, farmers like these wake up early to milk cows, deliver a premium product that's being sold in Vietnam. And that's why I'm here in Vietnam too, deliver more jobs, higher income. And I hope these farmers have a great break. They deserve it. Well, the comments on that Facebook post are mostly not very complimentary, and most are asking the Prime Minister to see the sentiment amongst the farmers at home. Drop the Paris Accord, see what's happening on the methane science, see what's happening with the net zero fantasy, and more of this land going up in trees. And I just mentioned we drove back from Central Otago last week to Invercargill. And I can tell you, at points, this valley, which I first saw only 15 years ago, it's New Zealand being converted into New Finland because I am seeing pine trees growing on land which I would not consider marginal. I am no expert farmer, but it was perfectly good grazing land there for sheep and beef. That's what's happening. Christopher Luxon is getting quite a barrage of comments on that one.
Well, and he's doubled down on being part of the Paris Accord and being fully committed to the 2050 net zero pledges and all that sort of stuff. But going back to your driving through that country where the pine trees are, I've known that country, of course, all my life. It's been well fertilized with superphosphates and it grazed dairy, beef cattle and sheep for years. There is so much of that land that is being put into pine trees to get carbon dioxide credits, because effectively there's an investor saying they can do better than the farmer farming sheep and beef. And I heard of another block in Eastern Southland, which may have up to perhaps 25,000 stock units on it, also sold in recent days for a significant amount of cash. And of course, there's another article that we're aware of in, I think it's called Pongaroa or Pangaroa in the Wairarapa, where this lady is loves her farming, and she has come home to be the farmer, and she is now realizing her community's just about gone. I mean, it's
Don,
abhorrent, but
how
nothing
can
stands
down
still.
the country?
But you know, it didn't have to be this way. Sheep and beef farming may not have been that lucrative in recent years, but for a nonsense concept called CO2 trading, none of this would occur. None of it. And so, what's it doing? It's destroying the meat processing industry in certain areas because there's not enough stock. It has consequences. So, this is the dumb legislation that successive governments have endorsed, all under the name of trying to stop the world warming. And of
Even
course, that's a task that is fraught with failure.
you're monetizing nature there. To Atari, where we
That's
moved
exactly what I mean.
in 2020 till a few months ago, the amount of pines that came up around the place we were farming was astounding to me. In those handful of years, 4 or 5 years, about three farms sold to overseas investors, and four. One of them was really big, but it's a little bit distant. But around us, there's pine forestry coming, at quite the speed. And yet, on the other hand, not far away, tens of millions of dollars of taxpayer money have been gone to stop wilding pines. What are we doing?
Yeah, and I note in one of the articles I read today that in Northern Southland, Landcorp, who, by the way, has announced a half-year profit, a significant half-year profit for a change, they're taking out a 2.5 kilometre shelter belt of Corsican pines and putting in cypress trees because they don't seed nearly as badly as Corsican pine. But Corsican pine has a better use than the wilding pines that. Pinus contorta is the real problem one. It has very little value other than It creates a massive problem. In fact, I made a statement one time when I was in the high country saying I'd rather fall into a gorse bush than into a Pinus contorta tree, because it was like it had a bark on it was that was like a rasp. And when it gets past a point of a seedling, the stock won't eat it. It's too tough on them. So yeah, it's a big problem that wildling pines in the high country, especially Pinus contorta. And it's cost you and me as taxpayers gazillions of dollars so far, and it's still there, still problems. Anyway.
So on that same news, but now coming from the UK, in the UK, the Dare Climate Change Commission's seventh carbon budget was presented last week on the 20th of February. And surprise, surprise, just like the Hiwaka Ekanoa suggested in New Zealand, and now it's happening just with the pine forestry and all, the substantial cut to livestock numbers and meat consumption is suggested. This report calls for cattle and sheep numbers to be culled by 27%. It also recommends a 25% reduction in average meat consumption, a better energy transition, moving on to EVs, and all of that. Across the world, no matter where you are, the agenda somehow, uncannily, is the same.
It is, and I still have to re remind us all that New Zealand is unique amongst the world. In effect, in comparison with the United Kingdom, anyway, we get no environmental subsidy and no environmental grants. We don't get production subsidies either, nor perhaps they do in that area now either. But they definitely get a lot of government grants. And once you're in the hand of the state, you have no ability to rebut. So you see all these British farmers and Welsh farmers protesting. And actually, if I was a British taxpayer, I'd say, why are you protesting? We're giving you a whole lot of cash to keep you quiet. It's not enough. In New Zealand, we don't get any of that cash. And when we protest, we get treated a bit differently. So things are different here, but same problems. Except
Same.
New Zealand, they want it all for nothing. In the UK farmers do get some offsets from the taxpayer. And of course, that to me is wrong. And as I've said, once you accept something from the state, you're in their hand. You have very little rights to rebut what they're putting upon you.
Right.
Or
Moving on
repel.
to other natural climate wonders, but not sheep and beef and other things. So a report has been released. A new global satellite study has just confirmed what many of us suspected, what many of us have been saying, actually, not suspected, we've been calling it out for what it is. New Zealand isn't even on the map when it comes to the world's biggest methane emitters. This study that analyzed data from the European Space Agency satellite 5P, it found that the worst emissions in the world come from massive wetlands and coal seams and the like. Nowhere is livestock mentioned among the top ones. Let's see which are some of the biggest ones here. The Sudd Wetland in South Sudan, the world's largest persistent emitter of methane, 4.5 million tons a year. The Abira Wetland in Argentina, another major emitter. Then the oil and gas fields on the west coast of Turkmenistan, coal seams in China, Russia, US, the Delaware River basins, and others. What shall we do, please, Don?
Oh, and I'm very worried that Environment Southland's been given a bit of a smack recently for not protecting the wetlands in Southland. But here we are. We don't want methane because it's that bogey that's sort of going to cook the world.
Perhaps they should let our council off the hook, Don, then.
Yeah, perhaps they
Shouldn't
should.
I mean,
Yeah.
if we had more wetlands, we'd have more methane emissions. Who wants
I
to have
know.
it all?
Yeah, that's a contradiction. I just have to repeat. I know every week I have to repeat that methane from any source, so regardless of the source, in the spectrum of radiative forcing, it just cannot create a significant warming effect. It does create a very minor warming effect, but it's almost immeasurable. So regardless of its source, doesn't matter whether it's from a cow or a fish under the sea or a wetland. It doesn't matter. That took me years to find that out, actually, because I honestly really did believe that animals were causing warming until I actually spent time with likes of you and others, just interrogating the data and finding that there was a lot of hollow husks in there. We had been told a lot of what you might say porkies for a long time. And we're still getting them, by the way. I mean, we've just got to keep saying this. We need people to prove that our information is wrong, and no one in New Zealand seems willing to face it.
No one, because they're so far entrenched in it that backtracking at this point, it's virtually like I probably annoy a few people, but I compare the climate nonsense to the COVID one every time, Don. And it's the three C's, the climate, COVID, and cash. There's usually a gravy train involved whenever you go down this path.
There's a lot of C words, coal, cars, cows, you name it. There's a whole lot more. But isn't it interesting? I think this is a problem for us. Even amongst our co-hosts, our fellow hosts on RCR, there's people realizing how big this climate scam really is, and they're getting on board. Now I'm thinking, these people, some of them are my age, where were they when I was realizing this 30 years ago? So some people, and I'm not just picking on our fellow hosts, I'm talking the wider population, are finally getting up to speed with this stuff, but it's taken them 30 years. I mean, some people have had a whole career in this industry, and they're going to go into retirement knowing full well that they've banked taxpayer money or grant money, and what have they achieved?
It's hard to admit, isn't it, when you've impoverished your own, and that's what's happened. All of these costs are inbuilt, or every time you try to, you get a new insurance bill, you're buying food, you're buying a house, all of these, your council's charges, what are they predicting the future on? What are NIWA's forecasts? How disastrous are those based on which climate model they are using? We don't see them. They are not explicit, but they're implicit in all of
Well,
these.
another one we're told about is the market advantage. The international marketplace is going to pay XYZ more for your products when you meet all these credentials. I've never seen the true dollar value of any of that. Just recently, we've had Fonterra say they're going to pay a bit for, Mars and Nestlé are going to pay a little bit more for the milk from 300 farms. Well, I say, okay, that's fine. Let Mars and Nestlé pay the check directly to those farms. Let's not filter it through the Fonterra machine. And maybe that's a really clear indication of what the premium may be. But we're always told this stuff, that, for instance, we're such a pure ex country and we export everything with great credentials. Well, I think we do. But, I'm not sure that we get the significant premiums in the marketplace because no
The
one
Fonterra
tells
is
us.
not separating the milk drops, as you
Yeah.
said, of this particular
Yeah.
suppliers. Mars is not separating its candy bars, that these are the carbon neutral milk products based candy bars, and these are the other ones. This is all a crock. And talking of crocks, we've had a couple of listeners bring this to our awareness, and though I was aware, but I'll point this out. One, the Dunedin City Council a few days ago on its web page, Facebook page, put up this post saying, "Are you a small or medium business who would like to stay ahead of the curve and build a more resilient, future-focused business? The transition to a low-carbon economy is happening now. This is your chance to take part in a free pilot program." As Don said, beware of those who come bearing gifts. A carbon footprint of a business, a bespoke climate action plan, identifying cost-effective ways to cut emissions, and of course, networking with other forward thinkers. That there are councils now that are going into this sort of thing, but the councils have been in this for quite a long time. Net zero emissions, be it counts looking at the emissions of their own operations or looking at EVs for their staff. Similarly, there's this post on Voice Media saying misuse of ratepayer funds, and this person has written a blog post about that. Tataki Auckland Unlimited has established a digital tool to help small businesses adapt to climate change, along with NIWA, Auckland Council, and others. This is up and down the country. I have always said, when the global agenda comes to your doorstep, You talk about the UN, WEFs, and all of them, your center government. When it comes to your doorstep, it comes via local government. And this is why a few years ago, when you're trying to raise awareness for this, every time we said local government is where you have representatives who live, walk, and talk in a community. They're more approachable. That is where everyone should focus on. But I'm glad others are, getting aware of all of this happening.
But it's almost like it's circular. Every 10 or so years, we get a bit of a run, a bit of a groundswell of angst at local government. I mean, I heard a former National Party MP speaking the other day that we need local government reform. I mean, it's a very easy thing to say. Why have they never done it? This guy's been around for 40 or 50 years saying similar things, but there's never been any action. It's like it's the untouchable. You're as a councillor, you're untouchable, Jaspreet.
I don't think so, Don. I really don't think so. But there's Don. I sense a cynicism in him. He is, but yeah, you've been here, Don, and you have a full right to be to have this hold this attitude.
Well,
Where were people before this?
look, the local government has expanded its remit without so much as any resistance. They shouldn't be beyond their base remit of 30, 40 years ago. Look after
People
basic
want to
infrastructure.
be, literally babysat. People keep demanding more. You should, if they've extended their remit, why have others let them do it?
Look, and I've got this view, and it's pretty easy, but you could expand on it wider pretty simply as well. But people should pay for people's services, absolutely. And property should pay for property services, absolutely. The valuation of a property has absolutely zero bearing on most of that. But we still use property value-based rating systems. It's abhorrent, but no one wants to change it because it's convenient the way it is.
Just gonna be in the way
So
to.
sadly, we're going to keep butt blundering on until we get that massive funding reform that I've so desired all my political life. I never stopped being the broken record about it. I know some of your friends talk about how we've got to perhaps stop the money, the ability for councils to borrow so much money, and that's also a concern because, intergenerational equity is the term. We've got to sort of make sure that we provide for today, but in the future, and it has to be spread through. Well, that can play into some pretty nasty corners, can't it? As Wellington's finding out right now with its water infrastructure, I think.
Gosh, yes, they are. Well, it's nearly time for Don and me to go. We were talking about giving you a sneak preview, but we end up every time really taking the fact on this one. But a couple of things we'd like to mention. Number one being that Don and I have recently managed to get Larry Blair. He's a Taranaki-based energy expert. We've previously had him on Greenwashed to come talk with us. And since it's in our video format, you'll see Larry here on your screens, and we'll be talking about power. And we've done the a first recording in the series. It'll be dropping on the app anytime soon. And we look forward to doing a second one. Another thing Don and I will be doing soon is a climate mini series. A more, hopefully, a more bite-sized piece to help people get more confident when they speak about this issue, when, say, they challenge someone, or even when they're informing someone, because this is the feedback we've often received that. Oh, we know this, but you don't feel confident enough to challenge, be it a public meeting, a minister, a councillor, an insurance agent, anything. And we're hoping with the video format and being able to provide, you slides on screen rather than just talking you through when we had the radio format, this one is more helpful. And Don, there was another interview that.
Well, today I listened to Paul Brennan interview Brian Leyland, who is also an electricity and energy guru. So a vital listen. I mean, it's not hard to understand where Brian's coming out from. He's saying the market is broken, and his analogy was when electricity isn't like, for instance, a food item you can go and buy. If the food is short there, you go and buy some other type of food. You can't run your computer on gas or on coal. It actually needs electricity. And it's a very succinct way of putting it. And he's a font of knowledge. Just going back to the mini series on climate, we are also going to have a gentleman on that we've had on in recent years, Ian McIntosh is going to put his idea of and his thesis up for us too. So we're going to have him on very soon, probably in the next week, do you think, Jasper?
Yep, hopefully. Hopefully. Yeah. So yes, watch out for those episodes. So Larry Blair one on energy. This one with Brian Leland that Don just mentioned, that is already up on the app as well as the climate series. So that's about us for now. I know we always talk of a preview, but yeah, it just feels we can't let go of any issue, can we, Don, without saying giving our 2 cents about it.
That's true. And the issues we're facing today, most of them have been faced by previous generations, but there's these key ones around climate and local authorities misbehaving with our cash and governments misbehaving with, they're just the hardy annuals. They've got to be talked about every week because, as we know, Jaspreet, it's on message in volume over time. That's the
Yes,
mantra.
sir. Aye, aye, Captain, especially when there's local government elections later this year. So thank you so much for joining Don and me today on the Rural Report. We'll see you again in hopefully less than a week's time with another segment on the climate and energy. Thank you and goodbye.